was saying yesterday was that I think it would be fun once in a while to just write people off forever, and just forget about them. You know, put them behind you. I mean, there's some people, yes, after one and a second admonition, you just have to walk away from them. And you get screwed by people, and you would love to just forget about them. It's like, that doesn't bother me. But it keeps bothering you. And I wish I was one of these people who could just lock the iron doors of the heart, but I can't. I just can't do it because, again, there's some gift/curse inside of me that sees the good in people and sees that kernel of life, sees that spark of God in there. What did I just read in Colossians? All created through Christ, through Christ. So what am I going to do? I mean, everything that exists created through Christ. So am I going to curse for eternity or even for a week something made by Christ? I can't ultimately do it. I can't ultimately turn around, walk away, and say, to hell with you. I just can't do it. Again, I think life would be easier. And if you can do it, well, congratulations. But, you know, maybe it's this thing where as we're given the mind of Christ and the mind of God, and as we grow into maturity, then we're able to look through to the heart. We know that Jesus had this ability to do that. For the good and for the bad. He looked through hearts that looked good and he saw that they were wicked, and he looked through people that looked wicked, but actually they were good. So he had this x-ray of vision. But I think that if that vision, he saw people, he didn't entrust himself to people because he knew what was in humanity. Okay, now, even that, I think, is a relative viewpoint. He knew what was in humanity and that it was deceitfully wicked. Who can know it, right? Is that Jeremiah? Yeah, deceitfully wicked. Who can know it? And on one level, that's true. On one layer of the onion, that is true. But you peel that under that layer. Okay, what else is on that layer? Of course, we'd have to say Romans 3:22. No one righteous, no, not one. They're all gone out of the way. I'm not denying any of that. I'm just saying that humanity has been, why are people like that? Because humanity has been infected with sin and death. Death, then sin. Death is running through our veins. We inherited death from Adam. That's why we sin. That's why we sin. Well, let's go to that passage. I don't think I've done that in a while. Death passed through into all mankind, on which all sinned. That's Romans 5:12. Did you get that? I went through it kind of quick there. Thus, death passed through into all mankind. How did death come? We all know. It came through Adam. Even as through one man, sin entered the world, and through sin, death. Adam was the first human being who sinned first, then had death acting upon him. From that point on, we inherit death, and because of that, we sin. So, from that point of view, in Romans 3:22 and Jeremiah, the heart's deceitfully wicked, these passages are considering humanity after death is already operating in it. This is why I can say to you that human nature is not evil. Human nature is essentially good, but it's been screwed up by mortality. It's been screwed up by this sin. Passed through it, and on those who are dying comes sin. So I somehow have this magic ability/curse to appreciate this goodness, this essential goodness in people. And I'm not going to call it a curse anymore. It's a burden. I wish I didn't care. How many times have you heard that? I just wish I didn't care. If only I didn't love my son or my daughter or my husband or my wife, it'd be easier to put up with if I didn't love this person. How do you think Christ feels? That's what he could say. You know, he goes to the cross. If only I didn't love these people. Doggone it. Oh, but he had to go to the cross because he loved them. Ah, rats. If only I didn't love these people. It's a curse to love people. Love hurts. Love is a burden. Love carries with it a responsibility to the beneficiary of your love, to the object of your love. And certainly, God is love. And so he has the most responsibility for his creation because he is love. If anybody can't walk away from humanity, it's God. And yet we're told, of course, in Christianity that that is exactly what God is going to do. He's going to walk away from his own creation. He's going to walk away from them because he sees nothing inherently good in them. They're all just a bunch of joiks. They're a bunch of joiks who disobeyed him. But no, it's God-like that even though you're saying you hate someone relatively, it is God-like to see beneath that level into the level of the goodness that you put there, that you yourself put there in the first place. And it's God who put that there in the first place. But back to this relative viewpoint, because this is fun right here, because Paul is giving all humanity a pass, relatively speaking, in Romans chapter 7. Or is it absolute? Let's analyze it and decide then. In Romans 7, Paul talks about this dichotomy in himself, that he doesn't do the thing that he wants to do. He wants to do the right thing, but he can't. He says he's become an inordinate sinner through the precept. So the law inspired Paul to become a sinner. Now, the theme here this week is still victimhood. And I'm going to show you how Paul can consider himself a victim. And sometimes this is helpful to be used when you're just beside yourself and there's no way out and you feel like ending your own life. He says, I just can't take it anymore. Why aren't I a better person? Why aren't things better for me? There's a sense in which you can see yourself as a victim of forces operating on you beyond your control. One of those forces is a big one. It's called mortality. And another one based on mortality is sin. Now we're going to Paul again. In verse 13 of Romans 7, he says that I became an inordinate sinner through the precept. In other words, the precept, that is the law that said don't covet, produced in Paul all manner of coveting. So he was sold under sin. And then he said, what I'm hating, this I'm doing. Not what I will, I'm putting into practice. What I want to do is good, I can't do that. But what I don't want to do, this I'm putting into practice. And so, if the fact is true that what I'm not willing, this I'm doing, I'm conceding that the law is ideal, yet now it is no longer I who am affecting it, but sin making its home in me. There's the punchline. It's no longer I who am affecting it. So Paul is now admitting that something foreign is making its home in him. And here he calls it sin with a capital S. It's a power. And we just learned, this is a related verse to Romans 5, verse 12, that death passed into all mankind on which all sinned. Okay, none of us were responsible for the death that was passed through us, to us, through Adam. And from that death came sin. Now go back over to Romans 7, and it's sin, capital S, that is making its home in Paul, that causes him to say in verse 17, it is no longer I who am affecting it. It's not me. This is about what Paul's saying. It's not me. It's sin making its home in me. I didn't do it. Sin making its home in me did it. Now, that's the absolute, I think, now that I think about it. But I'm glad we're talking about this. Now, relatively, this is not going to work in a court of law. You're not going to be able to go to a court, where you're trying to defend a speeding ticket, let's say. You can get worse. You can be defending yourself against murder and say, pull out this verse. Say, well, Your Honor, it's not me. It's sin making its home in me. It's not my fault. It's no longer I. It was no longer I going 55 in the 35 zone. It was no longer I who killed my brother-in-law. No, that was sin making its home in me. So what you need to do, Your Honor, is find this capital S sin and put it in jail because it's responsible for my actions. And an astute judge would say, well, no, we're going to go behind the scenes and it's not sin. It's actually death operating in you that's causing you to sin. At which point you would be wise to agree with the judge. And so now we need to find the culprit, death, capital D, and we need to put death in jail because death is ultimately responsible. Oh, well, Who brought death into the universe? Let's keep going behind the scenes. Okay, well, that was, I believe, the Garden of Eden when Satan tempted the woman. Okay, now we need to find Satan and put him in jail. All right, let's apprehend the adversary. And that is exactly what's going to happen. Satan will be apprehended. We know that at the beginning of the 1,000 years. And he's going to be locked up in the submerged chaos, apprehended again after that, put in the lake of fire. But let's keep going back. And you can go behind Satan and say, well, this is God's ultimate intention, capital G. So what are we going to do? Arrest God? This is where we arrived at the absolute viewpoint. But we can't, in practical society, I'm coming back to my friend now, who I gave her the exercise, the spiritual exercise of trying to consider her evil father a victim himself. In a court of law, this is not going to hold up. This is a very, very mature spiritual viewpoint to consider criminals as victims, to consider Satan as a victim, to consider yourself as a victim because of sin and death operating in you. Even sin can pass the buck and say, oh, it's death. If it wasn't for death, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. Sin would have a good point. So now we're going to apprehend death. Death says, well, I wouldn't even be here if it weren't for that serpent. True enough. We go to the serpent. And Adam and Eve passed the buck. Very humorous. Eve says it wasn't me. I didn't do it. The serpent did it. You know. No, first Adam says, this woman you gave me, she gave me to eat. This woman, you know. Adam passes the buck to Eve. That's fantastic. And then Eve passes the buck to Satan. Oh, well, it wasn't me. It was the serpent. So then God addresses the serpent. Fantastic. Love it. This chain of command or chain of blame, I guess we could call it, or chain of victimhood. But again, this cannot work or operate in our everyday lives because you can't take Romans 7:20 to court and say, it's no longer me, man. It's sin operating in me. I'm not responsible for this. Well, ultimately, you're not responsible. Ultimately, you're not responsible. But there's the relative and the absolute again. I'm holding you responsible for letting me know when my time is up on this show. But God's responsible for everything. Absolute relative viewpoint. I'm giving you the responsibility relative to everybody else in the world to whom I'm not giving the responsibility. So God has, of course, the ultimate responsibility. It's keeping these things separate. But when it serves our purposes, it's fine to think of yourself as a victim of sin. Paul does it right here. Cut yourself some slack. The devil made me do it. Of course. So cut yourself some slack. But then again, we reap what we sow. But I don't want you to get into some spiritual abyss or some go down the drain of life here. Holding yourself completely responsible for these things in the absolute viewpoint, thinking that God had abandoned you, that God has abandoned you. How could God abandon you? He made you who you are. And no matter how bad you are, you have a spark of divine life. If I can say that of Satan, I can sure as heck say it of you. And this is what I told my friend, and I think it made a difference. I'll find out. I'll keep you up to date on this story, this developing story. So, I'm ultimately glad that God is using intermediaries to afflict me, because I can see things from two points of view. I can see them from the relative point of view and say, get behind me, Satan. That's helpful at times when I'm wrestling in the relative. But I can also say, God, you have brought this into my life, and you have a purpose for it, and you have a reason for it. And so it's like being able to switch from AM to FM. You feel like listening to talk radio, feel like being cerebral, intellectual, or then you want to switch to the classic rock station FM and you want to just rock out to Blondie. It's nice to have the option. It's nice to have this relative and absolute viewpoint. Isn't that nice of God to work through an intermediary to afflict us? Because when we're fighting, when we're in the struggle, and when we need to keep God up there pristine and pure, we can fight Satan and say, get behind me, Satan. Jesus himself said that to Peter. It's a great viewpoint to have when you're in the battle. But as you grow in wisdom, grace, knowledge of God, then you have the privilege of changing that channel to the AM station, to the absolute station. and take comfort in the fact that nothing can come to you except what comes to you from God.